Well, to begin with, on Menti, maybe you would just like to complete the question, how long have you been a governor at a church school? You may have been a governor elsewhere, but if just put in whether you've been less than a year, 1 to 4 years or 5 years, it just gives me an idea of your experience of governance. It's only the briefest of ideas, but it just starts us off. So if you could tick the right box and then press submit, that will give me that answer. And you should see the answer come up as well on your own screen. No, it's not coming up on your screen. So I see that most people have been 1 to 4 years, one person less than a year, and five people 6 or more years. So a small mix of experience. Inspections have long been controversial. They're even more controversial now through the Ofsted framework and the experience of the last 2 or 3 years. And of course, we know that there will be a new approach to outcomes to Ofsted inspections come the autumn, which in itself is proving very controversial as well. SIAM's changed a couple of years ago now. The framework was revised in September 24, and what we're going to be looking at is how a SIAM's inspection, we're not going to look at how it's different from Ofsted, we're going to look at what are the intentions behind and within the SIAM's framework and its application. Now, my dad was a decorator by trade until he finally retired, and that was both a blessing and created some caution, some concern. He used to come and do it for me in my early years, in my early 20s, which was wonderful. And then he got busier, I got busier, and I think he thought I should take a bit more responsibility. So I started to have to do my own decoration. And that was a challenge because not only had I watched him for many years, from probably about the age of 5, so I did have some idea of what the highest expectations were. Actually achieving that was more difficult than I perhaps realised at first. And there were times when I decorated a room and nervously awaited his first visit to see us. And he came in a bit like an inspector. And he just stood in the middle of the room looking around. And I looked up at the cutting in, you know, between the ceiling and the wall. And I kind of went cold when I realised the line was not as straight as he would normally expect. And his gaze, of course, was drawn to that slight imperfection in my work. And it wasn't a really pleasant feeling, really, when he perhaps said nothing, or on occasions would go, you need to work on your cutting in. It's a bit like an inspection. It challenges head teachers, it challenges teachers, and it challenges us as governors. It's like having your peer come and look at your work and pass some kind of judgment on it. So what SIAMS has sought to do, and I won't claim that it's achieved it in every single inspection, because we're talking about human beings and their own weaknesses and failures and so on in carrying out the intentions of the inspection. But the intention was to do this inspection thing in a new and different way, to help it feel more like a professional conversation where there is collaboration between inspector and the people on the ground, all of us, staff, leadership team and governors. To collaborate in recognising, I suppose, two things. What we're doing well, to celebrate, and what we could do better. What they will try never to do is to use the word you're failing at this or you're not succeeding at the other, but just to simply be able to say, look, there are ways in which you could improve what you're doing. And for that reason, every SIAMS report will have one, two or more recommendations for the school to work on. Even if they are seen to be successful, there will still be room for improvements. I think we should be familiar with that within the school context anyway, that we've never arrived. There's always more to the journey, and we can step forward and onwards. So that's really kind of what's intended. There are three documents that I think you would find particularly helpful. I hope you've already got the SIAMS framework. If not, you'll be able to download that from the learning page at the end. The other two books, for which there are details on the learning page, are two Grove books. They're very reasonably priced, $3.99, I think. $3.90. I've got one here. They are, doesn't say on it. I thought it said the price on the book. $4.95. Now, you will be able to download for free the Developing Theologically Rooted Christian Vision in Schools, because that's come out more recently and is available under an arrangement we have with Grove Books. But I would urge you to think about buying or reading those two books alongside the SIAMS framework. So today we're going to divide, or over these two sessions, we're going to divide SIAMS inspections into these eight headings, if you like. Today we'll be looking at inspection being accountability and developmental, inspection in a Christian manner, inspection of the school's Christian vision, and the focus on the context. That will all become clear in the four joined together in a way before we get into some of the practical details of the inspection day next Friday when we come together again. So I may not answer all your questions as we go through. What I would urge you to do is jot down on a piece of paper if you don't find that easy to remember, or put it into the chat, and I'll endeavour to either answer the question during this session or next week when I've got to the more practical stuff. Otherwise, you'll be able to email me. That email address will be available to you at the end as well. You do have it already, but that way. All right, let's kick off. Let's start with inspection, statutory inspection of Anglican and Methodist schools, to give it its huge title, is about accountability and is developmental. Those two things are not held in tension, they're held in purpose. So accountability, we're showing that the inspection process, the inspector, what is happening in our schools. In order that may be reported to the government, to DfE, but also so that the parents and others will know what progress we're making in the world of the Christian distinctiveness of the school, I guess you might traditionally have called that. But at the same time, the idea is that what is identified can be celebrated, and what needs to continue to develop can therefore be an agenda for the future. The whole of the inspection and the framework is about establishing the answer to the question on the screen. How does the school's theologically rooted Christian vision enable pupils and adults to flourish? Two or three things about that. The school's theologically rooted Christian vision is what we're going to probably spend most of the session on in due course. It's at the heart of the life of the school, it's at the heart of the inspection framework and of the inspection itself. Notice as well that it's about enabling pupils, and here's the change, and adults to flourish. And we'll look at what it means to flourish and in the context of the framework as we go on. But essentially what we're talking about is how well the school is meeting the needs of the pupils, the children, the students, and the adult staff within the school. And it's really important to recognise and to remember that this inspection framework is not just about what happens in the classroom amongst the children, but against the adult body as well. And I think that's a really important thing to focus on. And it's really important because we as governors are responsible for the well-being, the ongoing learning and education of the teaching staff, the support staff and so on, as well as how that will impact pupils. I suppose you might say it's a bit like the mantra, a happy parent makes for a happy child. And although happiness is probably a really quite weak definition of flourishing, it is a definition, it's part of what it means to flourish. I think as well that we recognise as church school governors that the place of scripture, the Bible, is really quite significant in our own lives maybe, but certainly in the life of the church school. And it's Jesus that said, "You didn't choose me, but I chose you and appointed you so that you might go and bear fruit, fruit that will last." If we take that as a direction of travel, if we take that that idea on board that we're to go and bear fruit, enabling pupils and adults to flourish, we might put that into the word fruit, if you like, and we want that to be lasting, then we are onto a kind of what's intended through the SIAMS framework. Maybe that's something that you would intend anyway. In your contribution to the life of the school, in the work that you do as part of the governing body. Now, if you were to turn in the framework, and you're very welcome to do that, to page 5, you will find a number of statements, 6 statements, that are described as a SIAMS overview. And you get some really interesting, important kind of background facts there, which I won't go into now, but it's really establishing the fact that verse number 6, who are we, what are we doing here, how then should we live and learn together? So it provides an accountability mechanism for external judgments to be made on the same. What we've got here is a day, inspection day, that is a snapshot of the lived experience of the Christian vision across the academic year or years. And we need to just acknowledge that when an inspector calls, that is all it is. It's a snapshot, which gives us an opportunity but also a challenge. Now we need to, I need to just give you the background, and it says it on page 5 that this is a legal requirement. We're not doing it, the Church of England hasn't decided to do this because it's a good thing to do. They have decided to do it because they have to. And it is a government funded operation, if you like, to undertake the SIAMS inspections. And here's where SIAMS, the team have tried to reshape the concept to say, yes, this is a legal requirement, but we want this to be an experience for change and improvement, not to be just a judgment on the past, but to enable the future, a change for change and improvement. And thirdly, I think by preparing yourself for an inspection and putting things in place, and the inspection itself, and the follow-on from the inspection, it gives multiple opportunities to sit back, to step back and reflect on what we're doing, why we're doing it, and how we are achieving. And because it's a snapshot, because it will happen over just a few hours, this is an opportunity for particularly the adults in the school, especially the leadership team and the governors, to both reflect their practice, the best of what they do, and advocate for the school. Now don't hear that as a suggestion that we cover over the cracks and somehow don't let on what's not so good, because that would devalue the experience. But at the starting point, we're there to say, look at what we do. Look at what we've achieved. Look at how we're moving forward in this area, that area, or the next area. And these are the things we're going to be focusing on over the coming months or years. And to speak well of your school. And when you have your meeting, that's really what you can do, because governors meet with the inspector. Now, I want to establish, just in the briefest of terms, that this kind of accountability advocating role is a theologically justifiable experience. If this were a different context, I could trace from the book of Genesis right through to the book of Revelation, the last book in the Bible, and show you clearly how being accountable, or speaking up for what you believe, or where you've come to, or what you're intending to do, is illustrated right the way through Holy Scripture. It is a theologically justifiable experience. Now, what Margaret James has established, Margaret James is the lead person, the director of SIAM centrally, is that there is a purpose to this inspection process. So later on next week, I'll introduce you to the self-evaluation template. At this point, I'm just showing you the statement at the top of the self-evaluation template. You can read it for yourself, and it will give you a clear picture of what this is about. What I want to emphasize is the first three words, or four or five words, an ongoing culture and practice of. Being prepared for SIAMs is not preparing for the inspection, it's preparing and moving forward to be the best that we can be as a school. The flourishing of adults and children. There's sometimes in schools a flurry of activity trying to get ourselves ready for inspection, because we either know or think we're in the window, or we've had the phone call. Now, I understand why that will happen. That's human nature. But I would encourage you to recognise that what we're talking about in these two sessions is not so much preparing for an inspection, although there are elements of that. It's preparing or developing how we can improve and develop our schools. So that, yes, there'll be evidence to show the inspector, but I don't know about you, but I think the most important part of anything we do as governors is not just making the best decisions or the right decisions, or holding the school to account and all of that stuff, is actually how can we make sure the children develop as whole human beings, are educated well, and grow in their personalities, their character, and so much more. And now what the SIAMs framework suggests is, let's put that focus in on our adults as well, through taking this on board. Now, what an inspection is not, is this list of things. I won't go through them all, but just to say, inspectors are not there to tell you what to do. They might make some recommendations, but what you do with those is down to the school, to you and the senior leadership team. And neither is it the final word. So that, because it's a snapshot, there may be many things that the inspector has never seen, or not come across, or not been told about. So bear in mind that continued and ongoing self-evaluation is the journey. It's about the journey that the school is on, and that you are on the journey with as you lead as governors. So it's never going to be the final word. I mean, I suppose it's challenging because the report goes out, parents see it, and they will take their view on what's included in the report. But at the end of the day, as school leaders and governors are seen to be part of the school leaders, we're there to take this, it's helpful, but we've got other things on our agenda as well to continue the journey of improvement. So three statements to sum this up, as it were. The first is that a SIAMS inspection and the inspector relies on a wide range of people working together effectively and with honesty within a relationship of trust that needs to be rapidly established. This is talking about the day. So the inspector will talk to senior team, members of staff, parents, children, and somehow within the context of just a few hours, they're trying to be there in a relationship of trust. And I would encourage you to think about how you will encourage that. So that they're not coming in to, as it were, as the big white chief to tell you how well or badly you're doing. They're wanting to just discover together with us and therefore to carry out this inspection on a relational basis. Secondly, it prioritises people's interpretation of a range of things. And we can't get away from this. One person, male or female, coming in and talking to all of us about building that relational approach and trying to see how well the school is doing and all the rest of it, they will interpret it. And you can't get away from that. And you may not always 100% agree with their interpretation. That's why a good conversation will help to shape that interpretation. But at the end of the day, they have a responsibility. And as it says there, this is complex, multi-layered and essential. And then thirdly, the inspector's understanding and interpretations of people's experiences, feelings, impressions and views are key because they form part of the evidence base. And there's a kind of hidden suggestion there that a different inspector coming on the same day might see one or two things in a different sort of way. That's why it's subjective. It's subject to the experience as well as the training that they've undergone and what they interpret or they understand of what they've been told. And I think that's a really important principle to recognise and see how you can improve on that subjective interpretation by being as open and honest as possible, by having those really honest conversations. So here's a question for you to reflect on for a moment. Even if you want to disagree agreeably, that's a phrase I like, rather than disagreeing argumentatively, with the principle or the framework itself, why should we embrace SIAMS as a means of improving our schools? So I'm going to move forward to this question. And you can enter either, preferably one word answers, but if you want to enter two or three word answers, please do. You've got three opportunities to do that. Press submit, and we should then see what it is you have said. So why should we embrace SIAMS based on what I've said thus far? So just in case some of you can't see what's emerging there, we've got quite a number of contributions that are suggesting it's the opportunity to learn, to look from other perspective, I imagine that's supposed to be, improvement, discuss, reflection, the opportunity to learn, benefits the whole community, means of school for improvement, affirmation, opportunity, growth, an outside view. I do kind of like nothing to lose. That's an interesting perspective on what we're talking about. So thank you for those. I hope that just gives you a way of just reflecting on why what I've been saying is the overall purpose of an inspection. So it's accountability, but it's also developmental. Secondly, Margaret James, the director of SIAMS, has set out that inspections should be carried out in a Christian manner. She's introduced this theme to the idea of inspection, education generally. I've picked that up and written another Grove book I'll mention in a moment on the idea of governance in a Christian manner. I think of it in this way. We'll all be familiar, I guess, especially if you travel by train or tube in London, with the expression mind the gap and the yellow line that's painted on platforms that we're supposed to stand behind. I don't know if you've noticed over the years, over recent years, the gap between the railway track and the yellow line seems to have got bigger. I guess that's to avoid accidents. I remember reading just the other day of an elderly lady who goes to her station every single day to sit and hear the announcements that were recorded by her late husband, which is quite a moving idea, isn't it? She keeps in touch, as it were, with his voice by going to the station. And for me, they often, those announcements often kind of interrupt your flow of thinking, or if you're with people, you're talking because they're so very loud. Well, what the science people have said, let's mind the gap between the reality of how we usually experience inspection and what it could be or should be like. In other words, how can we narrow the gap between reality and something that is beneficial and a good experience? What does it mean to have that in place? So Margaret James' book, A Fresh Look at School Inspection, which I'm afraid is not available for download but can be purchased, outlines some of this thinking as the background to the changes that came in a couple of years ago and that are being worked out in practice. As I mentioned, I wrote a book last year on governance in a Christian manner. So looking at aspects of being a school governor and how we might interpret that and do that in a way that is a Christian manner. Let me add to this really and explain it. I quoted this statement, which was also in Margaret James' book, saying governance needs to be congruent with the ends of Christianity, with the end that is Christ. The enterprise in its further reaches must somewhere bear the imprint of his touch, something of the walls and configurations of his mark. In other words, the fingerprint. The fingerprint. I discovered the other day that the stripes on the forehead of a zebra are unique to every zebra. And that a parent zebra, mother zebra, will take her new foal aside from the herd, and will kind of ensure that the foal learns that those whorls and configurations, the lines or the stripes, so that when they're in the mix of the herd, the foal will always know who is his or her mother. I thought that was just stunning part of creation, really. And what we're saying here is that governors in a church school, whether they're Christians or not, have a responsibility and a charge to develop that school through governance, through leadership, and through what happens in the classroom in a way that somehow bears the imprint of Jesus. Take another illustration, very current. A lot has been said about the late Pope Francis, but the thing that strikes you, I think, through most of the reports of what he achieved during his time as Pope, his time here on earth even, was how he showed so much of the humility and generosity towards the poor and self-sacrifice. Didn't live in the Vatican, he lived in a tiny room, for example, that you might say, and people have been saying, this is a reminder of who Jesus actually is. Now, how we work that out in governance and therefore inspection is another matter, but we're called to be an example. We're called to follow the teaching. We're called to, in some way, be more Christ-like. So says Margaret James. Inspection in a Christian manner will always be respectful. I've highlighted the words in bold because they stand out. Always honour and dignify those involved. It will always be compassionate and take context into account. Will always seek to understand the truth. Then they talk about the inspectors as fleeting guests. Kind, open-minded, fair, expert and approachable. Determined, rigorous, challenging, authoritative and evidence-led. Now, when you've had your inspection, you could bring up this slide and use it to judge your inspector. That's not the spirit of this. The spirit of this is to say to the inspectors through their training, these are the kind of people you need to be. To the inspectors, this is what the course should experience from you when you cross the threshold and until you leave. These are the kind of marks of inspection in a Christian manner. Let me just give you a moment to reflect on those highlighted words. You're not going to go to Menti at this point, but just ask yourself about these words and what you might see in them for yourself, because let's turn the spotlight on ourselves as governors. We go into school. We are in some ways a visitor. I know we are the governors and we have a sense of ownership and so on and so forth. But on the whole, when we go into school during the school day, we're there because the head teacher has said, yes, please come in. They haven't said to us, no, not. Or they may have done that and you don't go in. Does this mark some of the ways in which you behave? Does this actually... Sorry, I gather you can't see the slide. Let me just put that correct. Don't know why that happened, but there we are. Is that better? Thank you for letting me know, Charlotte. So there are the words. How do you reflect on those? And how might you therefore expect an inspector to? Just a few moments to personally reflect. Okay, because you can do more reflection on that because you'll be able to download the slides. So, why would this be? Why would we expect more than we might expect from an Ofsted inspector or anybody else visiting the school? Well, because we take our guide, our model, the model behaviour from Jesus, we can recognise that He came and dwelt amongst us. This is God becoming man in theological terms. And John the Apostle wrote, he came full of grace and truth. And what we're saying about the inspection is that it should be full of grace, those other words that we saw at the first beginning of that last quote, but truth. It's not that we're going to avoid the truth. It's not that we're going to have no track with what is being recognised about our school, but the inspector is able to reach conclusions. So there should be a sense in which the inspector is impartial, but is able to tell us what we need to hear. So some key words and phrases that have been put forward as representing what might be true of an inspection. The inspector should be approachable. It should be bound up in being a discursive or a conversation. We will look at that next week. They should be able to look beneath the surface, bringing their own expertise. They are well trained. They are experienced school leaders. It should be collaborative. We've talked a little bit about that already. And it needs to be firm, full of truth, yet flexible enough to have that, let's put it this way, the truth statement that the inspector is thinking of putting into the report is flexible enough for the school leaders to be able to say, but that's not the case. This is the case. Or that's more nuanced than that, and show them other evidence. So it's never a done deal, or should never be a done deal, by 2:30 in the afternoon, because there's further conversation to have as we collaborate and work together, particularly the head senior team with the inspector. So bearing the imprint of the touch of Christ, or being full of grace and truth, or any of those words in the previous quote, is these are some of the things that will be the outworking of that. Again, just to focus on that idea of collaboration, this is one professional meeting with other professionals. Now, when it comes to the meeting with the governors, I guess you may not see yourself as a professional in governance terms, but you're there in a professional role. However limited your professionalism is because of lack of experience, lack of knowledge, lack of not being an educator, nevertheless, they want to see us all in this together with our own part to play in the improvement of the school. So they need to be able to gather the right evidence from the right people. And all of us, everyone, head, cleaner, lollipop lady, the people, or man, the people who work in the kitchen, whoever they encounter, should feel able to be open and honest without that compromising the process. And I think we have to grasp hold of metal and say, it doesn't matter if someone says something negative, or what we or even the head will perceive as being negative, because there's always conversational opportunity to say, well, that might be that person's perspective, but here, let me show you the evidence, or what we are actually doing about that. So we need to have a degree of trust in the process of being a collaboration, as it says at the top of the screen. So Margaret James said in the early training on this inspection framework, the aim is to lead the school knowing that they will be represented accurately and that they're in a better place to move forward. Again, this is summed up in some of the quote things that are on page 6 of the SIAMS framework, which talks about the what, why and how of SIAMS. 6 and 7. Now, I won't go into that. Some of that will come up next week as well, but that's where it's found, if you like. Don't see pages 6 and 7 as the small print or some kind of summary highway code, nor SIAMS for dummies, because we're not, but an essential set of bullet points to guide us and help us to see what's involved in all of this. Right, in the mentee this time, can you reflect on what I've been able to share with you about the Christian manner intended and how you will approach an inspection because you're thinking of it from this kind of perspective that they've set out and that I've sought to introduce you to. So reflect on the Christian manner intended and what's your response? What do you feel is your response to all of that? There are some great answers in there, and you can continue to add to those if you would like to. I will download those comments, the mentee, and put it on the learning page as soon as possible after the session so that you'll see them all for yourself again. But I'm going to carry on now with the kind of core matter that we need to grasp hold of, and that's the importance or the place of the school's Christian vision. And I say you could continue to add, but I'm going to move it on to, can you remember your school's Christian vision? Without going to a document, without looking it up on the website, just in a few words maybe, what is your school's vision, your school's Christian vision? This is a test of whether you know it rather than the validity of the vision statement, but add that there. And if you've got if you know the Bible text, just share that as well. We'll see what comes up. Nothing at the moment? All scratching your brains? Don't mind, it doesn't matter if you don't get the actual words right. And if it's a really long one, don't worry. Don't bother. Because, just leave it. Because they really shouldn't be long. Great stuff, yep. Bit of honesty there, I don't remember. Fair enough. It's okay, Linda, don't worry. Just engage as best you can. Okay, I'm not going to comment on your Christian visions. What I want to do is set out the expectations of a theologically rooted Christian vision. Because that's what's important, and you will have to make the, well, you personally, your governing body, will need to have conversation about whether theologically rooted Christian vision really is met in your current vision. And we'll talk through that as we go forward. So vision is really important. Simon Sinek talks about the why of the golden circle. And one of the tests of your vision is it the why or is it the how? Because it should be the why, not the how. And he talks about how many institutions start with, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to do it. Oh, perhaps that's why this is why we're going to do it. And actually the best organizations start with why. And he says one of the reasons is that why drives decision making. And I often say about the school's vision, whatever that is, that it should drive every single decision that's made. So just as a different kind of example, on Sunday, after our annual church meeting, the new PCC will need to meet briefly to decide on which of three quotations to go forward with some work that needs to be done. And I can imagine that at that meeting, people will just have their own opinions. If I were chairing that meeting, and I won't be, if I were chairing that meeting, I would suggest very firmly that we recognise and remember our three-point vision, and one of them in particular, and let that drive what we do or decide in terms of the three invoices. Quotations, rather. The vision should drive the decision. The vision should drive how we do something and what we do. I don't know whether that illustration is helpful because I hadn't thought that through. It just occurred to me that that's something I'll be involved in this weekend. A vision needs to be something that is possible, but is also it's achievable. You've got two maps, so you've got the tube map in London and you've got the map of London, not quite so detailed, not going quite into the centre there. And the reason I put that there is because I remember a time when we got, my wife and I got a tube from Waterloo to very near to the theatre that we were going to watch some play or musical. When we came out at, Hoppers 10, quarter to 11 at night, we looked across from where we were standing and we could have got to the theatre by simply walking over a bridge. Instead of going down escalators and across and down again and then on the tube journey and then back up and around and then walking to the theatre. We've been taken in by the idea that the underground is the solution to all your travel needs in the centre of London, when actually, if we just used our eyes, we would have recognised a much quicker, shorter route above ground and probably much more pleasant. Well, it was, walking back. And I think we need to reflect on our vision statements and ask ourselves, how direct are they? How are they going to get us to the destination? We're not looking at the how in Simon Sinek's model. We're simply looking at the vision and saying, is this going to get us where we need to go? Or is it going to set us off on a roundabout journey? But crucially, particularly within the SIAMS framework, the question that's asked is, what is the provenance of that vision theologically? Hold on to that question. What is the provenance of that vision theologically? Stephen Cotterill, the current Archbishop of York, wrote an amazing little book that I use a lot in training, Hit the Ground Kneeling, which is not just about praying, but about reflecting. And he says, spur yourself on with a ridiculously large vision of how things could be done. One that is beyond human imagining. One that is forever drawing on the talents and abilities of those involved. And a lot of visions are pretty short-term. They're kind of something you can do within the next year or two. But actually having something that's kind of more in the future will be useful. Now, it's really important that your vision aligns with the Church of England's vision and the diocesan vision. And that's not just us saying that. The Maintain School Governance Guide that came out March 2024, for the first time, set out how governing bodies must set a school vision that's in line with the school's mission set by the relevant religious authority. That's basically talking about those two things, the Church of England vision and the diocesan vision. But it also says, third bullet point, in accordance with any trust deed, which then makes us think back historically, as well as more widely, the Church of England vision, and then what we are ourselves as a school. You are familiar, I hope, with the Church of England vision, which is deeply Christian, serving the common good. You'll be able to download the document that's behind that, and you'll be able to see more detail of that vision if you are keen to explore this. And it's based upon this concept of Jesus or God being the sure foundation for our times. So there's a lot in there that can help you in thinking through your school vision from the point of view of the Church of England vision. It's broken into these four quartiles and based around the verse in John 10, life in all its fullness. Well, on pages 8 and 9 of the framework, this idea of a theologically rooted vision is answered or addressed under the questions, who are we, what are we doing here, how then shall we live together, live and learn together. And you can use those as establishing a discussion around the Christian vision. But essentially, I want to kind of address what a school's theologically rooted Christian vision is. What does this actually mean? But first, inspectors are not there to inspect the theology of your theologically rooted Christian vision. Otherwise we'd be in real trouble, because they will have a spectrum of thoughts and ideas around what theology is. So they're not detectives, they simply want to see that there is a theologically rooted Christian vision, that you've thought it through. So, this big word, theology. It's a hard word, isn't it? And many people recoil from it. So, mentee, how would you consider your theological prowess? Could you confidently explain what theology is? Are you confident in your knowledge of Old and New Testament from the Bible? Do you have a good understanding of Church of England core beliefs? So if you can just answer whether you strongly agree or strongly disagree with any of those four statements, because the last one help, or whether you're somewhere along the line, you can choose to put yourself where you think it's appropriate. Now, the end result of this is not what's important, because that's showing what the group thinks. And clearly one or two of you put in that you strongly agree with your confidence. So this is just a little bit of an opener, really, on theology. But there are some of you who are saying help. Okay, theology. When we think of theology, we think of books, of study, of big books. A lecturer that I've got to know recently has written a book on wine in the Bible. It's a thick book, and he's trying to encourage people to buy it, but it's I think it's about £67 to buy, so certainly I'm never going to buy that book at that sort of price. Books, theology, teaching, learning, being learned. Here's a picture of Rowan Williams, a former Archbishop of Canterbury. Last autumn, I sat in a session all afternoon with him. It was like sitting at the feet of Jesus. He just has had us in the palm of his hands, just openly talking about God and prayer and a particular psalm. It was quite a remarkable experience. All that can daunt us. It can make us think, theologically rooted statement, well, theology is not my thing. Well, I want to argue, as is being argued elsewhere, that everyone is a theologian. They may not be good theologians. We may take issue with some of their theology or their understanding, but everyone has the capacity to have a view, here it says, about the nature of reality, the demands of reality, and those elements in reality that support or threaten meaningful existence. Big words, big statement, big philosophical, theological views. But the bottom line is, you know what you think and you know what you believe, or you come to that, what come to understand what you think, or you come to understand what you believe. So in developing a theologically rooted Christian vision, start from the perspective that we've all got something to offer to this kind of difficult conversation. And if you look in the Developing Theologically Rooted Christian Vision book that you can download, it's an attempt, the writer describes this, as an attempt to think and speak about the nature and activity of God in as authentic and consistent a way as human words will allow. It's a bit ironic that I stumbled over the words where in that statement, isn't it? Now, these are deep things in themselves, but we can all potentially contribute to a shared understanding. That doesn't mean we can all make up our own minds and we can come to some understanding. It means we need to be led, and because we're talking about spiritual or Christian theology, your ex officio clergy person is in a good place to help shape that discussion and guide you in that discussion as it contributes to your theological rooted Christian vision. What that will not be is a set of values. We've probably all grown used to over recent years, particularly those of you been a governor longer, to having a set of values. Now, we don't need to do away with those, but somehow we need to recognise that a theologically rooted Christian vision is not about a set of values, nor is it simply having a Bible verse or a Bible passage, although it might be informed by one or other of those. And it really isn't, so okay, the Church of England's come up with a vision, we'll just adopt that. It's not that at all. Partly because the huge value of the discussion about vision is the discussion itself. So if you want an example of a theologically thought out, thought through Christian vision, then the Church of England vision is that, not to be adopted by the school, but to perhaps give you an idea of the way in which that can be developed and unpacked. And this is what Margaret James says about that vision. So what is it that you need to be discussing, developing and understanding in order to come to that statement that we might describe as a theologically rooted Christian vision? Sorry, that's gone backward rather than forward. Here we go. The first is your historic context. How did the school come to be? The second is to know your leader's vision I sat in many vision-making meetings in different schools where the head teacher has tried, needed to kind of manipulate the discussion at worst, or frame the discussion to end up with a vision that he or she would have started out with. That's not what this is calling for. It's saying, what is your leader's vision? You've appointed, as a governing body, you appointed this person to be the leader of your school. And it may have been 6 months ago, it may have been 2 years ago or longer. But what is their vision? What are they going to contribute to the discussion alongside the historic context? And then thirdly, to know the local context. Know something about your immediate locality, or most likely, because we're Church of England schools, parish. We'll have a look at that in a moment. Fourthly, what is it your school needs? What's the direction of travel? What are the needs looking ahead 2, 5 years ahead, 10 years even? Trying to scope out what is it that the school needs. So as you put these four concepts are together and on the table, around them some scripture to inform them, that's where your ex officio probably will come into their own, to create a discussion that encapsulates what you're going to put into a vision statement. So if you like, these are the ingredients in the cake that you're going to make, but then you've got to make the cake and come up with what the vision will look like. We're not going to do this now, but one exercise that you could use is this one. To take these two boxes with different Bible or theological words and say, our current school vision, which of these words does it inform or is informed by? And then what does that tell us about how we can move forward to another vision? So I'm giving you two tools there. One is the five elements ingredients of coming to a vision, and then these theological words as they may impact your current vision, or they may describe your current vision, or may be missing from your current vision. And that's, again, part of the discussion that you may have. What we're talking about here is putting some things in a row that get you to the point where you can say, well, you know, this text, this Bible text or this Bible story really can inform what we want to be, what we want to become in our vision because of these elements that we have explored. Now, the key to this is how you enable the discussion. And that's quite difficult. If you're not the chair or the head, and you're one of the governors, you may think, well, what impact can I have? How can I drive this conversation forward? Because as I've alluded already, it is the conversation that's going to make all the difference, not just to the outcome, the actual vision statement, but how it's used, how it drives the agenda. So I just want you to give a thought to that concept. What am I going to do in order to facilitate more of a discussion? And even if you think we've arrived, we've got the vision, how are you going to discover or drive a conversation to reflect on that vision to see if it is fit for purpose for the future? Because that's a real outcome of this session. What are you actually going to do about the theologically rooted Christian vision that you can then speak to an inspector, but is also, and more especially, driving the agenda? So how will you get your thinking in order to enable a discussion? This is a personal thing, so that's why we're not saying it out loud. Nobody knows what you put down here. We'll just see the words or thoughts coming up on the screen as before. So just to comment on the collaborate with staff and governors, there used to be a time not very long ago when Vision was a full-on collaboration right through the school, out to the parents and even the community in order to come up with a vision statement. Because this is now more complex in terms of being about the theologically rooted Christian vision, there is some collaboration or gaining of people's ideas, but on the whole, it's a decision that will need to be taken through discussion at governing body, senior leadership team level, and there's not quite the desire or the intention, there's not the quite the requirement that there's broad and wide collaborative exercises. That doesn't mean to say we don't need to be able to explore our vision, explain our vision and get people on board. That is extremely important. Okay, I'm going to leave you there to continue your thinking and to take that forward and just close out this particular section and go into the final section with this, I hope, help. Number one, they don't expect everyone in the school to recite the vision. Because essentially, theologically rooted Christian visions tend to be a little bit longer than the pithy statement that we used to be driving for in the past. What will need to be is a really good description of it, an unpacking of it on the website, and the inspector will have looked at that before even engaging in the inspection process. That's one of the first things that they will do. But they will expect two things. One, that when we're talking with them in particular, that vision, how that vision was created and its theological roots are understood. So yes, we don't have to be able to recite it, but no, we don't need to recite it, but yes, we will need to be able to talk through it from its historical context, its scripture context, the leaders, the immediate context and the future. And secondly, and over all of that, they need to see evidence of that vision in action. And you'll see when we come to go through the framework how every single one of the QIs, inspection questions, how every single one of them is about how the vision is working itself out in the life of the school amongst both children and adults. Okay, coming into land in just over 10 minutes, and it's coffee time. So if you're anything like me, you're looking forward to another coffee. But fourthly and finally this afternoon, still this morning, the inspection is focused on the context. And one of the things of those five areas that we talked about just now is the immediate context in the parish or the locality of the school. And there are two aspects to this. One is the historical context. So why was the school established? Now, you might be a fortunate school where someone can find in the archives of the school the original trust document that the school was established on. It may not be the current school building, because that may have been a newer building than the original start-up of the school. But essentially and typically, Church of England schools were started over 200 years ago, and they were for the purpose that you see on the screen. So you don't need to have your foundation document, just need to kind of bear in mind that Church of England schools were established originally to provide education for the children of labouring, manufacturing and other poorer classes of the ecclesiastical district. Or to put it more simply, schools were there to teach reading, writing, arithmetic and the scriptures for the children of the poor children, for the children of families who would never be able to afford to go to a school that you had to pay for. This is way before 1944 Act and schools for everybody. So your school was most likely, with one or two exceptions, was set up by a philanthropist to meet the needs of the poor of the parish or district. And that's how we need to, the starting point. We need to be asking ourselves, and indeed, what is it we can see of our parish now that drives our understanding of what is needed? So in his book, Paul Rusby makes the point, do I understand the context of my school, and do I know this from a deep understanding, and how to respond to it theologically, that is grounded in Christian belief about the nature of God and God's relationship to the world? So on the one hand, we'll be looking at the poor of the past, and then we ask ourselves, what are the poor of the present, and indeed the future, in our area? That's not to exclude those that are not designated as poor, and poor has to be seen in its broadest sense, not simply people who really don't have any money, though there are people. Children in poverty is a really big issue in our country today and in our parishes, but more broadly than that. So what is your history? That's what we've established. That's why our schools were started. And what is the contemporary context in our current community? Now, there is a page on our website, the Chelmsford Diocese Education website, that details about the trust deed of the school. So it's well worth going to that website and looking it up and seeing what has been written about the original trust school or school trust deeds. To move us on in this context. So there is the local context, the people who live in the community that the school is feeds into the school, and that's much easier to see in a primary context because mostly people come from the parish or surrounding parishes. In a secondary school that becomes a bigger challenge, but I don't think we've got any secondary schools on the call today. Just checking down. No, I don't think so. But they would need to look at a much broader picture. But then there are so there's the context with the people who live around us. Then there's the churches, or certainly the parish church linked to the school. But don't exclude in your thinking the other Christian churches, because they also impact the lives and families of people living in the parish or the community. And then there's the diocese, so every parish church, and therefore every parish school, every Church of England school, is linked into the diocese. We're Essex and East London, here in Chelmsford, and there's a need to see that context. And that's why we in the diocese have an education team that support the schools, because we have a responsibility to enable the schools to become and be good church schools. And then there's the general work of the school anyway. But thinking about the poor of the parish or the community we're in, just to set your mind thinking about what that might look like. So do you live in a community where it can be identified by those of you involved in the school that there's a need for hope? And there could be all sorts of reasons for why hope is lacking in a particular community. Or are families crying out for aspiration? And what does the Bible say about that? But starting from that point, are we in a community that over the last decade or two decades has lost that sense of aspiration? Or do people need more than anything to learn respectful and dignifying generosity? This is a pressing need. What can we learn from Christian teaching about this? Or is there an urgent need in the community for a place of refuge and safety? Sometimes that will be prevalent because there's a women's refuge in your community, or lots of people have come to the community as refugees, asylum seekers and so on. So take a look at the makeup, the social makeup of your community, and identify one or more of the particular focus that maybe the school needs to bear in mind in developing their theologically rooted vision. Clearly, if you live in the parish, you'll have something of a possibility of knowing some of that. Or if you're involved in community activities, and so it's good to listen to the governors that come particularly from the community or from community action. And they include the foundation governors who come from the local church or churches. So building up that picture so that the vision is inclusive, if you like, of the needs of the people around you. Now, I do need to just touch on this because diversity and inclusion doesn't happen by accident. And when we're thinking about the community, we need to recognise if we are lacking in diversity or if we don't represent the diversity of our community. So there's some issues there to think about, because the Christian church, therefore our theology, is very much about what's summed up in Revelation 7:9, people from every nation, tribe, people and language. And we need to think about that in terms of the makeup of our governing body, because otherwise we will have a bias that actually isn't beneficial to either the children in the school or the community that we're serving. So we could go into more of that, but I'm sure you can pick that up from elsewhere if you want to. Now, you might say, I really don't know much about my school or my community. So Governor Hub, who you may or may not use, have come up with a site where you can get all kinds of facts and figures and information about your local community around that school. It's governorhub.com/insights, free of charge. Just type the name of your school in there and you'll get a whole load of facts and figures and information that you can pour into that discussion about the locality that you are intentionally serving. I just want to touch on trusts, because some of you will be in multi-academy trusts, and whilst every individual school is still inspected by law under legislation, the inspector will want to talk to probably the CEO of the trust or someone designated, because the framework has a section that involves trust leaders and indeed the diocese. So it's important that those relationships are squared up and part of the discussion.